When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Today on The Grave Talks, a home for the haunted, the Pythian Castle. A conversation with Melissa Thoreau. Tucked away in the heart of Springfield, Missouri, stands a towering limestone fortress with a past as layered and mysterious as its walls, the Pythian Castle. Built in 1913 by the secretive Knights of Pythias, it was never meant for rituals or brotherhood meetings. Instead, it was built as a home for aging members nearing life's end and orphaned children left behind by tragedy. But that was only the beginning. During World War II, the U.S. military took over, transforming the castle into a rehabilitation and holding center site for prisoners of war. Rumors of confinement, hidden tunnels, and unspoken wartime horrors still linger in the basement shadows. More than a century later, the castle still stands, and it seems, so do its former residents. Disembodied voices ripple through the marble lobby, doors slam where no one walks. Children's laughter echoes in the hallway, as does a woman's greeting, but who and where is she? Today, we step inside the haunted Pythian Castle with Melissa Thoreau, where history never rests, and it seems neither do the spirits. Melissa, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about the Pythian Castle in Springfield, Missouri. Crazy thing, I've been to Springfield, Missouri a number of times, had no idea this castle existed. And it's magnificent.
You know, it really is. And it's kind of funny you say that, because even some folks who have been in Springfield their whole life don't even realize that it's there, or they've heard of it, but they don't even really know what it is. They just think there's this random castle in the middle of town.
And never really dug into why there is a random castle in the middle of town.
which I was kind of that way too. I was born and raised here in Springfield, and it wasn't until my husband and I were looking for a place to get married that I was like, well, let's actually go to this place and take a tour, because we knew they did weddings there. So I was like, well, let's just go see what this is, because I have always heard about it and I heard all these stories, but I never took the time to actually go see it and find it, because it's kind of, while it's on kind of a main part of town, it is kind of off the road a little bit. So if you just drive down Pythian Street, if you're not looking for it, you'll drive right by it.
Oh, that's interesting, because it's massive.
Yeah, but you have, I say it's a long drive. I would say maybe a quarter of a mile down this drive. And it's kind of tucked behind a business and a military reserve center.
Did you end up getting married there?
I did not. No, we did not get married there. But that going and doing the history tour there, which is what we did, because we wanted to see the venue, but we also wanted to know, you know, what it was about. Yeah. So we went on a history tour. And that kind of really piqued my interest with the building and what was going on there. And it's almost kind of like it was meant to be for me to be there, because a couple years later, I went back and did a ghost tour. And it's almost like the pieces just kind of fell in place, like, oh, you're supposed to be here. And now you're here.
Yeah. And now you've been working there how many years?
8 years.
And kind of do a little bit of everything there, do some tours and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'll do some history tours. I mostly give the ghost tours. And then, of course, if we have events, like we'll have weddings and we do murder mystery dinners and things like that. And if they need help with events, I'll pop in and do stuff like that. But it's mostly the tours that that's kind of what I really enjoy doing there.
You know, because where I live, we have a house that was built to look like a castle, a smaller castle, and still it's quite large. That was just built as a home. This is entirely different. The history of this castle I found quite interesting. So it goes back to one of those kind of, would you call it a secretive society?
You could say that, but yeah, because while things are maybe a little bit known about them now, back in those days, if you were not a member, it was very much a, well, what kind of things do they do? What are they all about? So, yeah, I mean, I still think there's a little bit of mystery there surrounding them.
Because they were the Knights of the Pythias. And I think, you know, back then, a lot of those organizations were formed, I mean, to be honest, so you could have a group of white men getting together, because that's basically what groups like that were white men. And that's what they were.
Yes, absolutely. It was an all-white male fraternal order. And back in those days, you know, that was perfectly acceptable.
Yeah. Nobody thought anything about it. It's just kind of what white guys do.
Yep.
And it was wasn't it a national organization?
Yes. Yes. And it's actually still around today, but their numbers are very, very few.
Because nobody can figure out why to join.
Right. Exactly.
So what is
exactly
this? We don't know why we should join this. It doesn't feel,
you know,
right.
It was based on, their whole thing was based on friendship and benevolence and, you know, trying to do good for your fellow man. That was kind of their creed, you know, that they would try to live by.
They were formed like around the time of the Civil War.
Yes.
Best I could tell.
Mm-hmm.
So they had some different, I was going to say buildings, organizations around. There was a number of them. And then they decided they wanted to build one in Springfield. Or did Springfield kind of want them to come to Springfield?
So there's a couple different things to that. So they did have their buildings for their meetings and their ceremonies, the things where all those secretive types of business took place. The castle that was built in Springfield, though, was actually not used for any of that. The castle in Springfield is called the Pythian Home of Missouri, and it was actually built as a retirement home for their members. So none of the quote-unquote business of the society happened at the castle. It was a space. So it was built as a space so their elderly members knew when the end of their life came or if they became sick, they knew they had a place that they could stay. They knew that they had a place to live out their end of their days. And there are actually several places in the state of Missouri kind of competing to get the home built. So Springfield actually won out because they offered several things. When they built the castle, they made sure that the sewer and the plumbing and the electric was built when the castle was built. They also donated a plot of land at the local cemetery. So when these individuals passed away, they already knew where they would be buried. So they already had a plot. They already knew they had a space that they could call theirs when they passed. So a lot of those things kind of won out. They also, instead of having to buy the land that the castle was built on, Springfield, I believe, only charged them $1 for the land that the castle was built on.
That was a deal.
So they provided a lot of perks to try to, you know, get this society to build this home here, because they knew that not only were the elderly members going to come there, but their families would come to visit. There were also children who lived there, because along with it being a rest home, it was also a type of an orphanage. So if your father was in the organization and he was a Knight of Pythias, if he happened to pass away prematurely, a lot of times mom would put her children in the home so she could try to either get a job, get a home figured out. Sometimes she would go off and try to find a new husband. And while she was trying to get things ready, her children could still have a safe space to live. They built a school across the street so the children could still get an education. So you basically had a bunch of elderly folks and children living in this massive castle.
That is very interesting that it ended up being a rest home, children's home at the same time.
Yes.
Two different ends of the spectrum.
The Pythians built several of those around the country. There is still one down in Weatherford, Texas. And the last I heard, it was still being used as a children's home today.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. Now, I have not been down there to visit. I have seen photographs, and it looks very, very different than our building. I just find it so interesting that it's still being used kind of as its original purpose 100 years later.
And when did they finish building this castle?
So it was finished. I got to think of my years here. I believe it was finished in the winter of 1913.
Okay.
So we don't actually celebrate the quote unquote castle's birthday from 1913. Because they did not want to use that as their dedication day because it was cold. They wanted to have a big party and a dedication. So they waited until June 1st of 1914 to have their big dedication day.
And is that the day you still celebrate then?
Yes. So June 1st of this year is when we will be celebrating the 111th birthday. And yes, we do have a party. We have cupcakes and drinks, and any guests that come to the building, we always like to take a photograph out front just to kind of commemorate that she's still around 12 years later.
Do you have any idea why they decided to build it to look like a castle? Because it's impressive.
I think some of that was just kind of going back to their imagery of being a castle, being knights. You know, their whole thing was being a knight of Pythias. And I think they were trying to play into that imagery when they built
that
it.
That makes sense.
But, you know, when a lot of folks look at an image of the castle, there's so many questions about it because there's one side that's a little bit taller than the other. And people ask, well, was that a fireplace? You know, what is that? There's no fireplace there. That's just how the architect decided to build it back in those days. But it's an all stone building. It's all limestone. And part of the reason they chose to use that was they thought it was safer. So if there was a fire that happened to break out, it gave everybody a little bit more time to get out of the building. Because the inside, the floors, the walls, it may be covered up with drywall now, but back in those days, it was either stone or concrete because they wanted it to be safe. So it's very, someone a couple weeks ago said it was almost like a fortress. I mean, I guess I can kind of see that.
It kind of looks like it, in a way, it looks like a castle prison. Kind of a combination of both, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they built it to last. And I mean, it has lasted.
And there's 36 rooms. That's what I read. Does that sound right?
I believe that's right.
Wow.
It's about 40,000 square feet. And some of the rooms have changed. So I believe originally it was less quote unquote rooms. But when the military came in the 1940s, they started splitting some of the larger rooms so they could have smaller ones. So I think that kind of changed the layout a little bit.
So not too long, because didn't it kind of play part in like World War II? They had prisoners of war there?
Yes. So the Pythians were totally happy there. There were no issues until the beginning of World War II. And somehow the military stumbled upon the castle and the land that it was sitting on. And the land, I mean, they used it as a type of farmland so they could try to be self-sufficient. And the military basically decided that they wanted that for the war efforts. And they actually went to the Knights of Pythias and told them, we'll give you 50 cents on the dollar for your land and your building, but you have 30 days to move out. And they didn't really give them a choice. They basically came in and said, this is what we're doing. You have 30 days to get your belongings and leave. And that's what happened. They came in and they basically, I hate to say they just took it because they did pay them some for it, but they did just kind of come over and take over the building.
So then what did they use it for?
So part of the land to the east of the castle, they turned that into a military hospital. It was called O'Reilly General Hospital. And they specialized in burn victims. So any soldiers that had, you know, any kind of burn injuries, things like that, they were sent to O'Reilly General Hospital to get treated. Now, the castle itself was not used for any kind of medical procedures, but they did use it for a space where some of those soldiers could come and like recuperate and rest if they had, say, a surgery next door. And then they had a lot of entertainment there. So we do have a theater on the second floor of the castle. They had movies that played up there. They had USO performers. I know Bob Hope came through the building one time. And they tried to keep things a little bit more upbeat for the soldiers who were there. I know in the basement at one point in time, there was a bowling alley. They had game tables. And they tried to keep things fun. But there's another portion of the basement in the castle that had jail cells that were built in there. And that's because the castle during that time did have prisoners of war that were sent to it during World War II. And I think a lot of people don't realize that during that time frame, several of the military bases around the country did have prisoners sent to them. But for a town like Springfield, that's just so, it's so rare. People don't think, well, why would Springfield have, you know, mm-hmm. Italian POW sent here? But they did. They had about 60 of them that were at the building. And they had two Japanese prisoners, and they had about 14 German officers that were sent as POWs.
That's interesting that they kind of multi-purpose with those, you know, using it to help, you know, you've got the hospital nearby helping people rehab, and here's some prisoners of war.
When we talk about this on the tour, a lot of people just think that they were locked down all the time and they had these little bitty rooms and, you know, all this stuff. But most of them were basically put to work around the building to kind of keep it up, almost like maintenance. I kind of like to compare it to that, because the Italian POWs, most of them weren't really a threat. I don't think they really wanted to be involved in the first place. So when they were at the castle, a lot of times we have a couple of photographs of them like fixing a window. They built this gigantic world map out of wood. Somewhere on the property, there was a woodworking shop. And that map is actually still hanging at the Military Reserve Center that's right next door to us. They still have the map that those POWs built. So really the only prisoners anybody was concerned about were the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
And they were actually kept in a building that sits back behind the castle. And that building originally housed the boiler, the laundry facilities, and that's where our steam tunnel runs in. So there is a tunnel that runs between the castle and this old powerhouse building behind it. And that's where they kept the Germans, because they didn't really think it was appropriate to keep them in a building where they had their soldiers, you know, recuperating, where they were trying to keep things lively and upbeat. So the Germans were very much kept away.
Yeah, they didn't trust them.
No, they didn't. And, you know, there's a lot of speculation on those POWs and things that went on with those POWs. But as far as the Italians, now the Japanese, those two POWs were actually cooks, and they cooked for a lot of the other prisoners that were there. So it wasn't so much doom and gloom for those guys. They were given a little bit of freedom while they were there. I know there was a baseball field somewhere on the property, and they were also allowed to go out and let off some steam, play ball. And then basically when it became nighttime, that's when they had to come kind of be locked down. That's when they made things a little bit more secure for the POWs.
After World War II, then what ended up happening with the castle once the prisoners of war left? And I'm assuming they no longer needed it as a hospital or recovery.
So the castle became like a training building for the military. So they did training exercises there. They did have some reserve units there. The land where the military hospital was, that became Evangel University. So there's a university there now. Military was there, gosh, as a reserve center and a training facility up until the 80s. And then they leased the castle to an organization called OCAC here in Springfield. And they're an organization that helps like lower income families with food and, you know, doctor's appointments and things like that. So it kind of switched gears in the 80s. So the military may have still owned it, but they were doing different things there. Their presence wasn't really what it was before that.
It's interesting. Such a grand building would be used to help low-income people.
Yeah.
You know?
And then the school across the street that was originally built by the Pythians for the kids, that remained an elementary school up until, I want to say, about 10 years ago. And the city of Springfield eventually decided that we had too many other schools, I believe, in town. They pretty much took it out of commission. And they were going to use that as well as kind of a as like a home for men, for like displaced men, homeless. And I think they even changed that plan as well. I'm not actually sure what they're using that building for, but it's still there. And then the army or the military built their own reserve center next to the castle that they use for all kinds of things. But it was used for OCAC up until the early 90s. And then the military decided they wanted to get rid of it. They didn't need it anymore. And that's when, in my opinion, a fun little story came to be on how it changed ownership. But the military decided they were going to put this building up to a public auction in the 90s, early 90s. They were only the second owner of the building. So they were expecting all these people to come and bid on the castle, and they were going to get, you know, pretty decent amount of money for it. Well, the day of the auction came, and only one gentleman showed up to the auction. And he had cash in his pocket. So by default, I guess you could say he won the bid.
Because he was the only one.
He was the only one. What, just out of curiosity, just curious what you think a 40,000 square foot castle in the Midwest in the early 90s went for at public auction? I like to ask this question because
it's tough. I got to think back to the 90s, but, you know, I would think it'd have to be in the upper hundreds of thousands.
So the number is something that always makes people gasp. And that always makes me chuckle because it's something that people don't expect. So it's a lot lower than that.
Okay. 500,000, 400,000. I'm looking at what houses are going for in my neighborhood, and I'm like, they're all overpriced, it seems.
So since this gentleman was the only one with cash, and by default, the quote-unquote winner, he showed up to this auction with $3,800.
Oh, my goodness. Cash. So they didn't have any kind of reserve on that?
Nope.
Wow.
And they had just finished redoing the roof on the castle. They had just done some maintenance on it. So they were hoping that all these people were going to come and they'd make back some of this money. So they reached back out to this gentleman and just asked, do you have anything else? Can you add anything else to this? And he managed to come up with another $200 and he won the bid of $4,000 for a 40,000 square foot building.
I mean, the land alone would be worth probably more than that.
Yeah.
Wow.
But they were not too happy about that situation, but they were basically told, do something with this building, get rid of it. We don't need it. So they had to take what they could get, and that's what they got. And this gentleman moved his family in. He had, I believe it was two daughters. And they moved their family in, and they treated it like a home.
Wow, that's fascinating.
I was told that they had a trampoline in the basement down where the POW cells are. I was told that his girls would ride their bikes and roller skate down in that area as well. And they just treated it like a house, which I kind of wish I was a fly on the wall when he told his wife what he did that day. Hey, guess what I bought today, honey? I bought a castle for
$4,000.
$4,000.
We can only afford to furnish three of the rooms, but.
Right, right.
Wow.
And, you know, that's kind of what wound up happening is the expense of keeping it up became too much. I want to say they were there for 9 or 10 years. And I know that they sold it to another gentleman. I do not know how much they sold it for. And I don't believe he did anything to it. I think he just let it sit. And then that's when the current owners purchased it. It was 2001 or 2002 is when they purchased it. And they also use it as a home. They live there. They have two dogs and a cat. And yeah,
And they, my guess is now, they have more of like an apartment area in the house.
Yeah. So their living quarters, I hate to say, are a little spread out, but like their private bedrooms and laundry, bathrooms, things like that. Those are on the second floor. I mean, you can see their hallway on the tour, but they're up on the second floor, but then their kitchen and their dining room, that's down on the main floor, kind of tucked away. Yeah. I don't know how they live there, because nothing is easy, because right. there's no elevator. There's no dumbwaiter. Anything you want upstairs, you got to hoof it up the steps. Furniture, all the things you carry up the stairs. As so many people are like, oh my gosh, I would love to live there. I don't even live there, and I would not want to live there. It's just, it's so much.
So much. Yes.
It's overwhelming.
Once she bought it and her husband, correct, their married couple.
It was actually her and her mother.
Okay, her and her mother purchased the house. Was the idea to live there and then kind of rent it out as a venue?
And yes.
Because it's a beautiful place for weddings and celebrations.
Yeah, they had moved here from Southern California. And for whatever crazy reason, they wanted a castle for some kind of a, as you said, like a venue for events, weddings, proms, you know, what have you. That's what they were wanting. And they just happened to stumble across it. And I'm like, well, isn't that just, you know, perfect? But how does one find a castle in Missouri? You know, there's not that many. There's not that many that I know of. But they stumbled across it, and they decided to go for it, and they bought it, and they moved in. And she has photographs of just how kind of, I don't want to use the word dilapidated, but in that time that one gentleman had it who didn't really do anything with it, there were parts of it that did fall into disrepair. The theater had birds living up in it, because there was a leak in the roof and somehow they managed to get in. So mm-hmm. they had to do a lot of work to make it livable just for the two of them. And the city also made that very difficult, because in my opinion, the city thought the castle could have been used for something more lucrative than a venue of sorts. Because of the location that it's at, I really feel like they were trying to get her to run her off. Oh. That's just my opinion. But they said it was a dangerous building. They told her that if her and her mother came within, you know, 1,000 feet of the building, that they could ticket them. They were almost, I hate to use a term, but it was almost like they were squatting in their own building.
Oh, wow.
Because the city was making things so difficult for them. And it wasn't until she really pushed to get it on the historic registry that things kind of started to change. Because once she got that on the historic registry, they couldn't really do a whole lot at that point in time. So once she secured that, things kind of turned around. And that's when her and her mom started making all these updates to where they were able to bring people into the building and to do those events that they were always wanting to do. But it took them a while to get to that point.
And I'm going to guess when she bought it, now, I don't know, I would look at it and my first thought would be like, yeah, way too big, number one. I'd never be able to afford the upkeep. I mean, my house is 1,100 square feet and it costs a lot of money to own a house.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I would look at it and think that. But right behind that thought would be, that place is haunted. There's no way I could live in there. Did that ever cross her mind that maybe she was buying a haunted castle as well?
I really don't think that they even thought about that. Because in my conversations with her, she said that no one ever really told them about any odd occurrences. Even that the family that had the two girls that lived there, I know that the current owner has spoke to them, and they never said that they experienced anything odd. Now, some folks, that's just how they are. They don't believe, you know, in spirits or paranormal, and they just don't believe in that kind of stuff. But that was not anything that she ever thought about until some people who had worked there during OCAC's time, when OCAC was leasing the building. It wasn't until they showed up on her porch one morning and was just kind of like, so have you had any odd experiences? That kind of threw her for a loop, because she was like, what do you mean? And one of the ladies was finally just like, so have you met the ghosts yet? And I think she at first thought, who are these weird women on my front porch asking me if there's ghosts here? But then I think that made her think a little bit more about it, because she said after she spoke with these women and they were telling her about some of the things they experienced while they worked there in the 80s, she realized she was having some of those same things, like disembodied voices in the lobby. She would be there by herself and she would hear a woman say hi or hello or who's there. But there was nobody else there except for her. When she started talking to these ladies about some of the things they had experienced, and she realized she experienced the same things, I think that's when she started thinking about, what did I buy? I think those thoughts started kind of like, uh-oh, what is this now? I will say she's not used to it. Things still happen today that put her on edge a little bit. Which I find a little funny, because she lives there.
Right.
You would think she would be used to it. But I mean, even for me, things will happen sometimes and I don't think I'll ever get used to it. But yeah,
agreed. Because number one, and things, you know, unexpected, like people saying hello when no one's around, is a little unnerving. But then you also have this really massively large home. You know, and I worry, like, okay, I'm in this part of the house, but they could sneak in anywhere. You know, I convince myself if somebody snuck in on the other side, I would never know, because I couldn't hear it from over here.
And that's sometimes the most unnerving part, like staying the night when they're out of town and we stay the night. I mean, yeah, the spooky stuff puts me on edge. But if I hear a door open anywhere in that building, my first thought does not necessarily go to a ghost. My first thought goes to, is someone breaking into the building?
Right.
Good thing for me, if that were to happen, is that I know every square inch of that building, so I could find me a really good hiding spot until the cops got there. But that doesn't make it any easier. Yeah, the spooky stuff, it's there. Even during the day, if I hear an odd sound or I hear a door creak, or my first thought, number one, I would die in a horror movie first thing, because I'm the person that would go try to figure out what the noise is. That would be me. I'd be a goner. But I want to know if it's someone in the building, if it's not somebody in the building, or a window's cracked open, you know, and there's a breeze and it happened to push a door shut. You know, I want to know what that noise is. So I'll go look. Sometimes I wish I wouldn't have gone to look, because I get more creeped out than what I was, you know, originally. But yeah, it's the unknown if it's actually a real person sneaking in. That's the thing that gets me.
Absolutely. And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Pythian Castle with Melissa Thoreau. For more information, visit their website at pythiancastle.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could also sign up at patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.